Chapter 49. Mr. Crisparkle, willingly accepting the commission, took his departure. Mr. Grewgious and his ward set forth on their expedition. As Mr. Grewgious's idea of looking at a furnished lodging was to get on the opposite side of the street to a house with a suitable bill in the window, and stare at it, and then work his way tortuously to the back of the house, and stare at that, and then not go in, but make similar trials of another house, with the same result, their progress was but slow. At length he bethought himself of a widowed cousin, divers times removed, of Mr. Bazzard's, who had once solicited his influence in the lodger world, and who lived in Southampton Street, Bloomsbury Square. This lady's name, stated in uncompromising capitals of considerable size on a brass door plate, and yet not lucidly, as to sex or condition, was Billiken. Personal faintness, and an overpowering personal candor, were the distinguishing features of Mrs. Billiken's organization. She came languishing out of her own exclusive back parlor, with the air of having been expressly brought to for the purpose, from an accumulation of several swoons. "I hope I see you well, sir," apostrophe said Mrs. Billiken, recognizing her visitor with a bend. "Thank you, quite well. And you, ma'am?" apostrophe returned Mr. Grewgious. "I am as well," apostrophe said Mrs. Billiken, becoming aspirational with excess of faintness, "as I ever am." Apostrophe, "my ward and an elderly lady," apostrophe said Mr. Grewgious, "wish to find a genteel lodging for a month or so. Have you any apartments available, ma'am?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, apostrophe Mr. Grewgious, apostrophe returned Mrs. Billiken, "I will not deceive you, far from it. I have apartments available." Apostrophe, this with the air of adding, "convey me to the stake, if you will, but while I live, I will be candid." Apostrophe, "and now, what apartments, ma'am?" Apostrophe, apostrophe asked Mr. Grewgious, cozily, to tame a certain severity apparent on the part of Mrs. Billiken. "There is this sitting room which, call it what you will, it is the front parlor, miss," apostrophe said Mrs. Billiken, impressing Rosa into the conversation. "The back parlor being what I cling to, and never part with, and there is two bedrooms at the top of the house with gas laid on. I do not tell you, that your bedroom floors is firm, for firm they are not. The gas fitter himself allowed, that to make a firm job, he must go right under your joists, and it were not worth the outlay as a yearly tenant so to do. The piping is carried above your joists, and it is best, that it should be made known to you." Apostrophe, Mr. Grewgious and Rosa exchanged looks of some dismay, though they had not the least idea what latent horrors this carriage of the piping might involve. Mrs. Billiken put her hand to her heart, as having eased it of a load. "Well, the roof is all right, no doubt," apostrophe said Mr. Grewgious, plucking up a little. Apostrophe Mr. Grewgious, apostrophe returned Mrs. Billiken, "if I was to tell you, sir, that to have nothing above you is to have a floor above you, I should put a deception upon you which I will not do. No, sir. Your slates will rattle loose at that elevation in windy weather, do your utmost, best or worst. I defy you, sir, be you what you may, to keep your slates tight, try how you can." Apostrophe here Mrs. Billiken, having been warm with Mr. Grewgious, cooled a little, not to abuse the moral power she held over him. "Consequent," apostrophe proceeded Mrs. Billiken, more mildly, but still firmly in her incorruptible candor. "Consequent it would be worse than of no use for me to traps, and travel up to the top of the house with you, and for you to say, 'Mrs. Billiken, what stain do I notice in the ceiling, for a stain I do consider it?' And for me to answer, 'I do not understand you, sir.' No, sir, I will not be so underhand. I do understand you before you pint it out. It is the wet, sir. It do come in, and it do not come in. You may lay dry there half your lifetime, but the time will come, and it is best, that you should know it, when a dripping sop would be no name for you." apostrophe, Mr. Grugis looked much disgraced by being prefigured in this pickle. Have you any other apartments, ma'am? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he asked. Apostrophe, Mr. Grugis, apostrophe, returned Mrs. Billiken, with much solemnity, I have. You ask me have I, and my open and my honest answer are, I have. The first and second floors is vacant, and sweet rooms. Apostrophe, come, come. There's nothing against them, apostrophe, said Mr. Grugis, comforting himself. Apostrophe, Mr. Grugis, apostrophe, replied Mrs. Billiken, pardon me, there is the stairs. Unless your mind is prepared for the stairs, it will lead to inevitable disappointment. You cannot, miss, apostrophe, said Mrs. Billiken, addressing Rosa reproachfully, place a first floor, and far less a second, on the level footing of a parlor. No, you cannot do it, miss, it is beyond your power, and wherefore try? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mrs. Billiken put it very feelingly, as if Rosa had shown a headstrong determination to hold the untenable position. Can we see these rooms, ma'am? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired her guardian. Apostrophe, Mr. Grugis, apostrophe, returned Mrs. Billiken, you can. I will not disguise it from you, sir, you can. Apostrophe, Mrs. Billiken then sent into her back parlor for her shawl, it being a state fiction, dating from immemorial antiquity, that she could never go anywhere without being wrapped up, and having been enrolled by her attendant, led the way. She made various genteel pauses on the stairs for breath, and clutched at her heart in the drawing room, as if it had very nearly got loose, and she had caught it in the act of taking wing. And the second floor? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Grugis, on finding the first satisfactory. Apostrophe, Mr. Grugis, apostrophe, replied Mrs. Billiken, turning upon him with ceremony, as if the time had now come when a distinct understanding on a difficult point must be arrived at, and a solemn confidence established, the second floor is over this. Apostrophe, can we see that too, ma'am? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, sir, apostrophe, returned Mrs. Billiken, it is open as the day. Apostrophe, that also proving satisfactory, Mr. Grugis retired into a window with Rosa for a few words of consultation, and then asking for pen and ink, sketched out a line or two of agreement. In the meantime, Mrs. Billiken took a seat, and delivered a kind of index to, or abstract of, the general question. 5 and 40 shillings per week by the month certain at the time of year, apostrophe, said Mrs. Billiken, is only reasonable to both parties. It is not Bond Street, nor yet St. James Palace, but it is not pretended that it is. Neither is it attempted to be denied, for why should it? That the arching leads to a mews. Muses must exist. Respecting attendance, two is kept, at liberal wages. Words has arisen as to tradesmen, but dirty shoes on fresh hearthstoning was attributable, and no wish for a commission on your orders. Coals is either by the fire, or per the scuttle. Apostrophe, she emphasized the prepositions as marking a subtle but immense difference. Dogs is not viewed with favor. Besides litter, they get stole, and sharing suspicions is apt to creep in, and unpleasantness takes place. Apostrophe, by this time Mr. Grugis had his agreement lines, and his earnest money, ready. I have signed it for the ladies, ma'am, apostrophe, he said, and you'll have the goodness to sign it for yourself, Christian and surname, there, if you please. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Grugis, apostrophe, said Mrs. Billiken in a new burst of candor, no, sir. You must excuse the Christian name. Apostrophe, Mr. Grugis stared at her. The door plate is used as a protection, apostrophe, said Mrs. Billiken, and acts as such, and go from it I will not. Apostrophe, Mr. Grugis stared at Rosa. No, Mr. Grugis, you must excuse me. So long as this house is known and definite as Billiken's, and so long as it is a doubt with the riffraff, where Billiken may be hidden, near the street door, or down the area, and what is weight and size, so long I feel safe. But commit myself to a solitary female statement, no, miss. Nor would you for a moment wish, apostrophe said Mrs. Billiken, with a strong sense of injury, to take that advantage of your sex, if you were not brought to it by inconsiderate example. Apostrophe, Rosa reddening, as if she had made some most disgraceful attempt to overreach the good lady, besought Mr. Grewgious to rest content with any signature. And accordingly, in a baronial way, the sign manual Billiken got appended to the document. Details were then settled for taking possession on the next day but one, when Miss Twinkleton might be reasonably expected. And Rosa went back to Furnival's Inn on her guardian's arm. Behold Mr. Tartar walking up and down Furnival's Inn, checking himself when he saw them coming, and advancing towards them. It occurred to me, apostrophe hinted Mr. Tartar, that we might go up the river, the weather being so delicious and the tide serving. I have a boat of my own at the temple stairs. Apostrophe, I have not been up the river for this many a day, apostrophe said Mr. Grewgious, tempted. I was never up the river, apostrophe added Rosa. Within half an hour they were setting this matter, right by going up the river. The tide was running with them, the afternoon was charming. Mr. Tartar's boat was perfect. Mr. Tartar and Lobley, Mr. Tartar's man, pulled a pair of oars. Mr. Tartar had a yacht, it seemed, lying somewhere down by Greenhithe, and Mr. Tartar's man had charge of this yacht, and was detached upon his present service. He was a jolly favored man, with tawny hair and whiskers, and a big red face. He was the dead image of the sun in old woodcuts, his hair and whiskers answering for rays all around him. Resplendent in the bow of the boat, he was a shining sight, with a man-of-war's man's shirt under off, according to opinion, and his arms and breast tattooed all sorts of patterns. Lobley seemed to take it easily, and so did Mr. Tartar, yet their oars bent as they pulled, and the boat bounded under them. Mr. Tartar talked, as if he were doing nothing, to Rosa who was really doing nothing, and to Mr. Grewgious who was doing this much, that he steered all wrong. But what did that matter, when a turn of Mr. Tartar's skillful wrist, or a mere grin of Mr. Lobley's over the bow, put all to rights? The tide bore them on in the gayest and most sparkling manner, until they stopped to dine in some everlastingly green garden, needing no matter-of-fact identification here, and then the tide obligingly turned being devoted to that party alone for that day, and as they floated idly among some osier beds, Rosa tried what she could do in the rowing way, and came off splendidly, being much assisted. And Mr. Grewgious tried what he could do, and came off on his back, doubled up with an oar under his chin, being not assisted at all. Then there was an interval of rest under bows, such rest. What time Mr. Lobley mopped, and, arranging cushions, stretchers, and the like, danced the tightrope the whole length of the boat like a man to whom shoes were a superstition and stocking slavery. And then came the sweet return among delicious odors of limes in bloom, and musical ripplings. And, all too soon, the great black city cast its shadow on the waters, and its dark bridges spanned them as death spans life, and the everlastingly green garden seemed to be left for everlasting, unregainable and far away. Cannot people get through life without gritty stages, I wonder? Apostrophe apostrophe Rosa thought next day, when the town was very gritty again, and everything had a strange and an uncomfortable appearance of seeming, to wait for something that wouldn't come. No. She began to think, that, now the Cloisterham school days had glided past and gone, the gritty stages would begin to set in at intervals, and make themselves wearily known. Yet what did Rosa expect? Did she expect Miss Twinkleton? Miss Twinkleton duly came. Forth from her back parlor issued the Billiken to receive Miss Twinkleton, and war was in the Billiken's eye from that fell moment. Miss Twinkleton brought a quantity of luggage with her, having all Rosa's as well as her own. The Billiken took it ill that Miss Twinkleton's mind, being sorely disturbed by this luggage, failed to take in her personal identity with that clearness of perception which was due to its demands. Stateliness mounted her gloomy throne upon the Billiken's brow in consequence. And when Miss Twinkleton, in agitation taking stock of her trunks and packages, of which she had 17, particularly counted in the Billiken herself as number 11, the bee found it necessary to repudiate. "Things cannot too soon be put upon the footing," apostrophe said she, with a candor so demonstrative, as to be almost obtrusive, "that the person of the house is not a box, nor yet a bundle, nor a carpet-bag. No, I am highly obliged to you, Miss Twinkleton, nor yet a beggar." Apostrophe, this last disclaimer had reference to Miss Twinkleton's distractedly pressing 2 and 6 pence on her, instead of the cabman. Thus cast off, Miss Twinkleton wildly inquired, which gentleman was to be paid? There being 2 gentlemen in that position, Miss Twinkleton having arrived with 2 cabs, each gentleman on being paid held forth his 2 and 6 pence on the flat of his open hand, and, with a speechless stare and a dropped jaw, displayed his wrong to heaven and earth. Terrified by this alarming spectacle, Miss Twinkleton placed another shilling in each hand, at the same time appealing to the law in flurried accents, and recounting her luggage this time with the 2 gentlemen in, who caused the total to come out complicated. Meanwhile the 2 gentlemen, each looking very hard at the last shilling grumblingly, as if it might become 18 pence, if he kept his eyes on it, descended the doorsteps, ascended their carriages, and drove away, leaving Miss Twinkleton on a bonnet box in tears. The Billiken beheld this manifestation of weakness without sympathy, and gave directions for a young man to be got in to wrestle with the luggage. When that gladiator had disappeared from the arena, peace ensued, and the new lodgers dined. But the Billiken had somehow come to the knowledge that Miss Twinkleton kept a school. The leap from that knowledge to the inference that Miss Twinkleton set herself to teach her something was easy. "But you don't do it," apostrophe soliloquized the Billiken. "I am not your pupil, whatever she," apostrophe meaning Rosa, "may be, poor thing." Apostrophe, Miss Twinkleton, on the other hand, having changed her dress, and recovered her spirits, was animated by a bland desire to improve the occasion in all ways, and to be as serene a model as possible. In a happy compromise between her 2 states of existence, she had already become, with her work basket before her, the equably vivacious companion with a slight judicious flavoring of information, when the Billiken announced herself. "I will not hide from you, ladies," apostrophe said the bee enveloped in the shawl of state, apostrophe "for it is not my character to hide neither my Gutenberg edition." End of chapter.